A word about what we're about to do, and the man that we're about to meet. We know the Ramban as one of the major Rishonim in Gemara and Halacha. At this point in your life, you've probably learned him indirectly more than directly. You've probably spent more time in his Talmidim and the Talmidim of his Talmidim, the Rashba and the Ritva and the Ran and Mukhe Yosef. In other words, the Ramban himself, in the Chidushim on Shas or in his Mechamos from the bottom of the Rif. The Ramban was one of the most prolific Rishonim. From Chasimus HaTalmud to today, the last 1,500 years, you could probably count on the fingers of one hand, if you even need any fingers at all, to count the number of Talmid Chachamim who wrote major svarim in as many genres as Ramban did. In other words, he wrote Ki Chidushim on Shas. He wrote on the Rif. He wrote a major Sefer of Halacha Lamasa, the Torah Sa'adam. He wrote a Perush on Chumash. He wrote Perushim on several svarim of Nach. And he wrote works on Kabbalah. He wrote works on Machshava, the Drushas. And then you have the letters of Musar. And he wrote poetry. And major, major monumental svarim. And so many. And we have droves of Tshuvas HaHalacha that he wrote. So much. And there's more. And there's more. The polemic is so much. He's so incredibly productive. So his pen was so incredibly prolific. It's really, if you begin to think about it, it's overwhelming. I don't know, again, as I said, I don't know how many Talmid Chachamim, if any, were as monumentally productive in as many genres. From Chasimus HaTalmud, the last 1,500 years. And within the Perush al HaTorah itself, there's so many different dimensions going on within the Perush al HaTorah. Because sometimes he'll do pshat, and sometimes he'll focus on halacha, sometimes he'll focus on medrash, sometimes he'll focus on kabbalah, and there's so many things going on. And often there's a focus on the machshava that flows from the psukim. So learning Ramban al HaTorah is really an incredible treat. I think the Chasam Sofer, almost 200 years ago, is the one who spearheaded the repopularization of Ramban al HaTorah. I think he writes in a tshuva that he encouraged the reprinting. Apparently they had almost gone out of print in large swaths of Europe, and he spearheaded the republishing of the Ramban, the repopularization of the Ramban. And just to give you a simple sense of what it is we're about to dive into before we do, here's another uniqueness of the Ramban. As far as I know, he's the first major mefarish on Chumash to write a perush which not only is pasuk by pasuk, as is Rashi, as is all the other perushim that you've learned, but he, in addition to that, he has a hakdama, a significant hakdama to every single one of the five Chumashim. And just consider for a moment that the hakdama to Bereishis, hakdama to Shemot, hakdama to Vikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim, and consider for a moment what that means. What that means, particularly in Ramban's case, is he's very concerned with what this particular pasuk means, and he's also very concerned with what's Chumash Bereishis about. What's Vayikra supposed to be about? So there's both the sort of the micro view and the macro view. And it's something that when you learn Rashi, so Chumash with Rashi, the focus is very much on the pasuk by pasuk, the zoomed in view. Occasionally Rashi will focus on the zoomed out view, but rarely. That's usually his focus is very much on the pasuk by pasuk, the trees. With the Ramban, it's both the trees and the forest. And you're going to get the bigger picture as well as the pasuk by pasuk treatment. And that's just sort of yet another sort of aspect of the breadth of learning Chumash and of learning Machshava that you get when you begin to open up Ramban. One more thing that we'll see, in addition to how broad he is and sort of the multiple views, sort of the getting the bigger picture of Chumash also, is that the way he writes is incredibly delicate and subtle. And it happens so often, you've come across this in Rashi, Al HaTorah, and on Gemara, you've come across sometimes in the Tosfos, that there's an unspoken kasha. We just start talking, Rashi starts talking, But we understand that he's really raising a kasha, which he didn't, he's implying a kasha, which he didn't make explicit, and he's just jumping into the answer. You'll find that all the time the Ramban in very, very subtle ways. The often could be like a whole paragraph, a whole chapter of ideas in half a line. So we'll try to keep our eyes open as we savor the morsels of Ramban we'll get to focus on, but we neder once a week. So let's take a look here. We begin our journey with the Perek Tes Pasuk Yud Beis. This is, I'm sorry? This is Parshas Noach. Yeah, this is Parshas Noach. This will add an element of Limud Be'in to our learning the Parsha. Zoso Sabrisa Sharanino Sing. And Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Noach he's going to bring the Mapel. Noach builds a Teva and he Taka brings the Mapel and there's a horrific destruction. And there comes a point that Kadosh Baruch Hu are part of the Zichronos. Kadosh Baruch Hu decides now it's time to roll the Mapel back. And he does, and ultimately things dry enough that Noach and his family can safely emerge from the Teva and they find desolation. And he turns around, he brings Karbanos, and Kadosh Baruch Hu has a conversation with Noach, and he tells him, this will not recur. There will never again be extinction, destruction, mass destruction to the extent that there was during the Mabul. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm making a bris, and this is going to be a sign of the bris. Yeah. I think we assume it's mass destruction. Right? I thought so. Right? The psukim make it clear. For instance, and now mass destruction is mass disruption of planet Earth. I should say even more broadly, right? Because the psukim stress the seasons were all askew. From this point on, the cycle of seasons will be regular. And Akash Baruch Hu says, I'm going to give you, that's a bris, that's a covenant I'm making with you, and I'm going to give you a sign. It's going to be a marker, an osa bris, zos osa bris asher anino sein. This is a sign of the bris that I am giving you, that I am placing, and what is that? The rainbow. It's kashna sati ba'anan, the rainbow is there in the cloud, and the keshes is going to symbolize this bris. So Rabban says, we look at that pasuk, and what's one question that bothers you? Or one question that bothers you, or one implication? He doesn't initially present it as a kasha. He's initially presented it as an observation. So you read this pasuk. So what does it tell you about the history of the rainbow? Didn't exist before, right? Started now. That's what he says. Mimashma min ha'os hazeh shelo haya keshes be'anon b'maser b'reishis. Apparently, up until this point, from when the Kadosh Baruch Hu created the cosmos up until the Mabul, says the pasuk, there was no such thing as a rainbow. And this is a new creation. Rabbi Shalom now originated a rainbow. Number one, that's in terms of the what, in terms of the history of the rainbow. Then the Ramban says, and how about the why? How about what's the why rainbows? So rainbows were never around before. And Kadosh Baruch Hu said, now I'm creating a rainbow. I create a rainbow, the rainbow, I'm making a rainbow, so that will bespeak this bris. So what does a rainbow have to do with, how is a rainbow a sign of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise that he won't destroy the planet again? What does it mean? Why, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating something now, so could have been anything. The Omru B'tama Osazeh, the pshat, the symbolism of the rainbow, Ramban says two things. Number one, ki hakeshes lo aso shiraglov lamala sheyira eki lumina shamayim orimbo. The rainbow looks like this, as opposed to looking like that. If it looked like a U with the raglayim, with the feet upwards, it would look like a bow, as in an archery bow and arrow, pointing downwards, right? But instead, it's pointing upwards, away from planet Earth. Aso behefach mizeh, Kadosh Baruch Hu portrays the rainbow pointing upwards. Laharos lo yorubom neshamayim. That's that demonstration that Ribbono Shel Olam is not planning to, so to speak, to shoot us. And says the truth is, we use that, and that's a human convention as well. That's what you'll find in a military context. If you want to show that you're coming in peace, that you're not planning to fight, so you might turn your weapon around. You might put up your hands to show that you have no weapons at all, no guns, no bows. Or you might, you wouldn't do this by a gun, but maybe by a bow, you would hold it backwards. You know, hold it by the bow with the string out, so it's clear that you're not pointing it at the person who could be your opponent. I believe, I don't know if it's true or not, I don't know if this is real or urban legend, that's the historical basis for the handshake. Is that it started not so much as a sign of friendship as much as a sign that you come in peace, because you can see that my hands are empty and free of any weapons. So along those lines, Rabban says, Amru, he doesn't say who he's quoting, but the classical understanding of why a rainbow, what does a rainbow mean? Oh, because it's a reversed weapon. It's a way of, it's like a divine handshake. Kadosh Baruch saying, I come in peace, not planning to shoot. I lowered my weapons. Okay. And number two, he says, She'ein lakeshes yaser l'chonen chitzim alav. Number two, it's a bow without a string. It's unloaded. Bow without a string, you can't shoot anything. So, okay, so Rabban says, so that's a symbolism. When does the rainbow start? Seems like right now. Why a rainbow? Number one, because it's reversed. Number two, because it's stringless. So two visual indications of I don't plan to shoot. So that's what Rabban says. That's what it sounds like from the pasuk. What's the problem with this? Problem is, Rabban had been reading Greek scientists. This is probably not the only place where he references the science of optics in particular. Maybe we get to Tazria, we'll talk about there. Fascinating Ramban about the nega being amok min ha'ar. But here he quotes, Anachnu al karchenu na'amin l'divrei ha'yivanim. Surprising line. We have no choice but to believe the Greeks. Al karchenu. We're forced to believe the Greeks. She'milahad ha'shemesh ba'avir halach yi ha'keshes betol ada. That the keshes is a tolada, above a comma word, and the keshes is created by lahat hashemesh bavir halach, the rays of sun passing through moist air. Why do we have to believe that? Why do I have to believe that? It's not just authority. He says, experimentally. Why do I have to believe? Keep it clean mind, listen to hashemesh, yeira'eh kemara keshes, because I can replicate this scientific method. That's done because the Greeks wrote in a book, and I have to believe everything that Galen wrote, which is how medicine worked for way too many centuries. He says, the Greeks wrote it, and we can replicate their experiment. I can take, Newton worked with a couple centuries after Ramban, Newton worked with a glass prism. But Ramban says, take a glass of water and put it in the sunlight, and you can artificially create your own rainbow. You know, it's not only, there's a little bit Newtonian, or pre-Newtonian, you know, proto-Newtonian, in the sense of noticing that there are phenomena in the sky that can be replicated terrestrially here on planet Earth. So Ramban says, it's not something, the rainbow is not a unique bria. The rainbow is just a nafkamina, just another example of basic principles of optics. I'm sure you've all learned about diffraction and refraction and Snell's law and so on and so forth. And so this is what we're talking about here. I can break up white light into component colors. I can do that on planet Earth also. I can do it with a glass of water. Well, because, oh, why is that a problem? Ravan says, it sounds from the pasuk that there was no keshes until the marble. Before the marble, there was no keshes. But now you're telling me, but I can create my own artificial keshes. So why is that a kasha? So apparently, in those words, it sounds like Ramban was not willing to, didn't think it was reasonable to assert that Kadosh Baruch Hu only created that quality of light at the time of the marble. So it sounds like the way you would have understood the keshes being created, it's some unique phenomenon, it's not part of general optics, that's some unique phenomenon that Kadosh Baruch Hu created then. But it's not. It can be scientific, it can be explained through the same physics that apply here. So Ramban says, so it sounds like they're, What, did HaKadosh Baruch Hu change the composition of sunlight? Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu change optics?
Maybe that wouldn't have happened. Like, if I took, before Noah, if I took a glass of water...
So you could say HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed the underlying laws of physics. So that Ramban seems to think is unlikely.
Or does it mean that we naturally.
So you could have said, you could have also said maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu just saw that you only have rainbows under certain, in the sky, you only have rainbows when the conditions are right. Here also, you only have the rainbow if you put out the prism, right? If you don't put out the prism, there's no rainbow. So you have to have the right climate conditions to get a rainbow. They don't happen every day. So what you could have said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just saw that there never were the right conditions for meteorological conditions for a rainbow until the Mabul. The Ramban sounds like he thinks, presumably thinks, that's also not so, not Mestaber, possible, conceivable, anything's possible, because Baruch do whatever Nisi wants. We'll talk about Nisim in a couple of moments. But Ramban says, Pashtus, the optics are the same optics that there were Kodem Mabul. So how are we going to make sense of it? It says, but on the other hand, you have the Pasuk. So what do? I have experimental data and I have a Pasuk. Ramban says, the truth is, you ought to learn Chumash more carefully. Kasha Nistakel Od B'Lashon HaKasiv Navin Kain. So the truth is, if you look more carefully, you stare at the words of the Psukim, you'll come to the same conclusion. The same exact conclusion. What? Ki Amar Eskash Nasati Be'anan. V'lo Amar Ani Nosein Be'anan. When it talks about the physical rainbow, it's past tense. Eskashti Nasati Be'anan. I have put my rainbow in the cloud. Unlike our pasuk. Didn't say in present tense the way it says in our pasuk. Zos Os Habris Asher Ani Nosein. When it talks about the rainbow as a sign of the bris, it's present tense. I am now placing the rainbow as a sign of the bris. I need no saying. But it talks about just the physical existence of the rainbow, that's past tense. And he says, even the word kashti, my rainbow, as kashti nasai benon, sounds like it's already a known item. Nilas kashti morish, I saw kashti trilo. Sounds like there already was such a thing. He says that's why he thinks more mistaber l'chein nefaresh, both because of the language of the pasuk, a sensitive reading of the language of the pasuk with the sensitivity to diktuk, and looking at the experimental data, l'chein nefaresh hakasav hakeshesh asher nasati ve'anon miyom abriya. It's the rainbow that's been around since Sheshes Mei Bereshis. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the universe and created the principles of physics and chemistry, this is already built in. The rainbows have been around for a long time. To Yemina, but that Eskashti, Nasati, on that rainbow that I already created, from now on, it's not just going to be a physical phenomenon, it's also going to have new added significance as an Os Bris. Is that possible? You have something that's already, it was already around from before, and now all of a sudden it becomes an Os Bris now? We were assuming up until now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the keshes. The keshes was created to symbolize shalom, pointed the wrong way, had no strength. Create the keshes now to be known for the rest. So Rabban says, well, let's look at Chumash. Let's test our hanachas. We were making all sorts of assumptions about how a bris works. Well, let's actually open the Chumash and take a look. If the keshes already was around, so what connection does it have with being oath? Hinehu ketam eid hagal hazeh ve'edah ha-matzeva. Or as tevak vasos tikach miyadi ba'burti yeli ba'edah. Yaakov and Lavan, when they part ways, they have a big rock and they have a pile of rocks, and that's going to be the aid, the witness to their bris to not cause each other trouble. What's this fundamental symbolic significance of a rock? So maybe it means like a fence, okay. Or maybe it is they put something down as a reminder. Right? You tie a string around your finger. Once upon a time, people used to tie strings that. Now you only know about strings around the finger because sometimes it becomes an icon for a reminder. But it used to be once upon a time, people actually took string and tied it on the finger to remember that something they had to remember today. What does the string have to do with going to dry cleaners? Not much, but there's something there that reminds you, oh, I have to remember something. And then you rack your brain to remember, what is it that I'm supposed to remember? And I sort of ironic. This is, that's what you have. The seven kavod, right? The avos are negotiating with surrounding heads of state. Avimelech, and this one, that one, I'll give you seven sheep to be an os of the bris, the treaty. Well, what do sheep have to do with peace? Because sheep are docile animals? Ron says, no. It's just the thing. Right. He called Dabra, but that was meant to be an os. He called Dabra and Nirish Yusam Lif Neshaim has Kiram Inyan Nadur Benehem. Whenever you have a visible item that's placed before two parties to remind them of the promises that they've made, Yikare Os. That's called an os. V'chal Haskama Bris. A bilateral commitment, a bilateral, a two way promise to one another, that's a bris. And that's the Mila. It's also called an os bris. It's a tangible reminder of promises that we make. A tangible reminder of commitment, of obligation. That's the os habris. Okay. And then he says, okay, so then he says, he's comfortable saying, either way, bein shetia keshas ata, bein shahaisa me'ol meteva, whether you're convinced that the kesher was created by Rabbeinu Shlomo at the time of the Mabul, or it already existed beforehand, hatam ba'ol sheba echadu. That's the same. Either way, it's the same way to understand it. He goes on to say there's an approach al pisod as well. Yishrav Hosein of the parasha zos sod nelam. There is deeper Kabbalistic understanding, and we're gonna make a right turn here, because Ramban, at the end of his introduction to his Perush, says, and by the way, I'm writing the Sefer for lots of different people. The people had a hard week at work, and they write, they tell you, you game, and you have a chance, Shabbos Yontif, to be Maver Sedra, so you can sit down and enjoy my parish. He says, I also included additional layers. He said, you will find Kabbalah in my parish from time to time, and I'm going to mark it as such, like he does right here. This is Sod. And he said, when you see that, it means that unless you're initiated, you should skip. It says, you're not going to understand it. If you think you understood it, if you're not initiated, you misunderstood it. I'm telling you in advance, don't bother trying. So we will take his advice and not bother trying. But turn our attention instead to one parallel, far smaller piece. Ramban picks up on this focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's interaction with nature, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's working and interacting with us through nature, and not everything is miraculous. This comes up also a very fascinating kasha the Rabban raises earlier in Perek Vav, the very beginning of the parasha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still laying out to Noach the tzivui of building the teva, and it gives him the dimensions. Right? The teva was around close to 2 foot. Close to twice as long as a football field. 300 amas. That's pretty long. That's big. Not as big as an aircraft carrier, but that's... Huh? Well, the Chaz Nisha was a 2-football field. Must the Chaz Nisha had bigger football fields also. Not sure. This is incredible, incredibly large. That's one of the first things the Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Noach. It's 300 amas, 50 amas, 30 amas. That's like, overwhelmingly large.
How much is 300 amas?
500 feet. Right? That's close to 200 yards. On the other hand, Rabban says, here in Perek Vav Pasuk Yutes, the Pasuk then goes on to tell, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Noach, once he builds it, the next step is going to be to fill the teva, Mikol Achai. He's going to bring in biodiversity. Every single land-based species, and all the species of birds. Says Ramban, one second. Should I imagine that in your mind for a moment? The ultimate zoo. How large, what's the minimum size of the ultimate zoo? Yadua ki achayos rabos mod. Here Ramban begins. We know that there are an incredible, over astronomical number of animals. Mehem gedolos mod kipil makarem is awesome. Some of them are very large. Elephants are enormous. What a rain is a good question.
whether you think it's a rhinoceros or whatnot,
there are some really big animals out there. Tremendous animals.
And Aremus, Aromes, Alaaretz, insects are tiny, but the number of species of insects, Rabmo, millions of species of insects. The Gamma Opa Shamayim being Rabban and Limister. Innumerable species of birds. And so besides the fact that we can directly observe that, species of birds are hard to observe. You're just in one place, you're different species in different parts of the world. He says it's a Gemara. Chazal were well aware. According to Gemara in Chulin, turn the page. Amar Rabbi Seinu. The Pesukim give a list of the 20 some odd categories of non kosher birds. Everything else is kosher. So one of the ones that we don't hear about so much is the ayah, Aleph Yud Hey. They say, look at Maseches Chulin. I think this is near the end of the third parak. Me'avet Esra Mini Opus Tamei Miesh B'Mizrach V'Chula Min Ayahim. In the east, you'll find 120 different species of ayah. Just the ayah alone, which is merely one of more than 20 different categories of non-kosher species and non-kosher birds, 120 species of that. And then Opus Tamei Mispah. Most birds are kosher. You think of the number of inhabitants that were meant to reside for a year inside a single teva. Each story, and he said, it's not just the animal, not just two of every species. What else do you need?
Seven of kosher.
Seven of kosher. Food. And how much food?
A
year's worth. He needs stark lavim yikum shall lead to kamosam. Right? You're going to need to have every single species because that's the only way you're going to perpetuate these species. The chasha test of lukul machal. Is a borrowing language of the pasuk in Chumash Vayikra. You'll gather the food that can be eaten, l'shana tamima, for an entire year. Lo sachil osam hateva dos. No way that this teva can hold them. Lo eser keotiba. It's not as though if you had 10 tevas, you also, it's nowhere near. There are orders of magnitude off of what you need. No way. The ultimate zoo. It's thousands of tevas, millions of tevas.
Planet
Earth holds. So I understand this. How could it be? The answer is, well, we believe that God created the universe, and that Kadosh Baruch Hu created all of science, so he can, obviously, is empowered to suspend it at will. That we call a nes nigla. Avol hu nes. Hechzik muras hamaruba. That's a nes, and this is, Rambam points out very subtly, this is a category of nes that we've heard of before. There are patterns to nisim also. Hechzek mudas hamaruba, a notion of a small space containing miraculously large amount of contents. And where do you find that? The Ara on the Beis HaMikdash, I opened Tzufufu Mishtach, and Revachim, that the Jews in the Beis HaMikdash, the kippur, all of a sudden, they're like they shoulder to shoulder for hours and hours. But it came time to mishtach, and all of a sudden, everyone had space around them. That's a nice of hechzik mudas hamaruba. And Rashi al Torah, in a couple of months, we'll come to the psukim described all of Klal Yisrael came Pesach Ol Moed to watch what was happening. All of Klal Yisrael, millions of people are Pesach Ol Moed. How is that possible? The answer is it's not. That was a nice. It was a miracle. Hechzik mudas hamaruba, right? Or somewhat similar, you mentioned the Aron is not even machzik makom at all. That's sort of like, saying your variable specifically to hechzik mudas hamaruba, hechzik zero space as hamaruba. Right? So we've come across such a nes before. Great question. Excellent question. Such a good question. Exactly. Rambana asked that right now. V'im tomar. Well, then yasena ketana. In other words, that's probably what I would drive in to begin with. If you tell me it's a nes, so then what if to... You realize what type of construction project this was? And without modern technology, you're building something that's double the length of a football field. And it's meant to... And a large boat that's seaworthy. Who needs it? It's a nes anyways. So just make a living room. Make a little boat. Make a little motorboat. And you can have one in. You can make a one person kayak. Kadosh Baruch Hu can make a nes of that too. What do you have to build an aircraft carrier for? Manam Shach, it's a nes. Right, exactly. He wasn't working with a team of contractors and subcontractors here. There you go. See, he was not exactly working with that technology. He used a 3D printer called his hands.
and axes and trees. So I don't remember who it was who made the Ha'ara, that if texting would have come first, and then they introduced cell phones for calling, we'd be like, wow, it's incredible, you don't have to use your hands, you just talk. Right, whatever came first. Right. That's not cool, but if you could leave a voice message on WhatsApp, that already feels snazzy. Right? But my son said he was working with the 3D printer of yesteryear. So why? Lema. So if it's going to be natural, Mela. Because Bro was doing ace anyways. So then what do you need to knock himself out? The Ramban writes, oh, I see I wrote in numbers, you see? Two terutzim. Let's see one tarot, and then we'll start for some questions, and we'll end with the other tarots. Ro Hashem Yisbarach, the first tarot is more localized. The second tarot is a global yusod. The first tarot has to do specifically with the story of the Malbim. Ro Hashem Yisbarach, Lasosam Gedola. Roshem wanted him to make it large. Why? Not that it would actually contain all of its contents, nowhere near. So what was the point of making it so big? Kadeshiyiru Osa B'Nedaro. So that everyone would notice it. Gershbo tells Noah, please build a 20-foot boat in your backyard. It's going to be a 20-foot boat in my backyard. No one's even going to see it. If they saw it, there would not be anything remarkable. Literally, not remarkable. No one's going to talk about it. No one's going to make remarks about it. He's building a boat. So the rest of it, half the community has boats. Okay, so what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it, the goal of making the teva was not only to save Noah and all the species that Ribbono Shel Olam wants to save. The goal, that was the second goal of the teva. The first goal of the teva was it was, in the best sense of the term, a publicity stunt. It was meant to be an advertisement for the coming of the Malbim. It was meant to, it was mechaz de Hashem to get the word out, if you don't do tshuva, you're really going to regret not doing tshuva. We really recommend you do tshuva now while you can. So it was meant to be attention grabbing. By design, it was attention grabbing. It was an enormous billboard. It was the best billboard that said, the Mabul is coming. Do tshuva while you can. He said, that's why it was so large. For the same reason billboards are large. That way people notice them. They'll say, what on earth is going on here? They'll talk about it. And it becomes the haq. And this one talks to that one. And it becomes a topic of conversation. This was early PR. The keenness of the will become a point of conversation. Ulai, the Malbul, the teva was trending. Ulai yasu tshuva. Why is Kadosh Baruch Hu interested in the teva trending? Because maybe some people do tshuva. Mechaz Hashem, he was looking, not just that there's a, he's willing to accept tshuva, but he was proactively seeking to inspire tshuva. As we know from the Pesukim, it didn't catch any fish that way. It didn't actually encourage, and no one actually took Kadosh Baruch Hu up in the offer of tshuva. But Ribbono Shel Olam mitzido wanted to make that over. Some questions, and then we'll close with the Ramban's other answer to why was the teva so big if it was a nace anyhow. Yeah.
Wouldn't it have inspired people more if they saw people put someone building a tiny little boat and then someone taking hundreds of thousands of species onto that boat?
Yeah, that would be pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You could build anything, what do you mean?
I know, but the reason to build a huge teva.
Right. Here's the difference. Offhand, I would say yes, but that's a one-time event. The building of the teva took over a century. You don't just want your ad up for 5 minutes. You want to have your ad up for as long as possible. So if the teva itself, if the size of the teva is monumental, then throughout the construction process, if not weeks, certainly within a year or two, the Teva construction site looked really strange. Totally bizarre. What on earth is going on? So you have for decades and decades and decades, over a century, there's something that people are looking at and gawking at and saying, what's going on? If you just wait, to the very last day before, the last couple of days before the Mabul, that's not so much of a...
You also still get that.
A couple weeks? How long did it take already?
It probably took years to get all the species.
It doesn't sound right from the Pesukim, so I think that's not the way Chazal understand it. But definitely you don't have near the same span of time. Yeah.
So if Noah, if the point was what the Ramban is saying, what it is, then why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give such darker dimensions for the Teva? If the point is that it's big enough that it's impressive, but that it's small enough that it's still a naze, then why did it have to be 50 amos and 30 amos and
That's a good question. Because it's told Noah, make it really big.
What's the importance to us?
Oh, so that might actually, you may just have answered your question. I mean, the point may be primarily for us. I mean, to know this, to know, it's teaching us the two answers, the concepts that lie behind the two answers and Ramban. So number one, the Teretz we saw so far, it's an expression, as much as we read Yonah on Chazal, the Gemara Megillah says, Chazal Masakin, that you should lame Yonah for the Haftarah of Yom Kippur afternoon. Why? So the Beis Yosef quotes where the primary reason is to teach us Godel Kol HaTshuva. You see, people could mamet that Kadosh Baruch Hu is accepting Yonah's tshuva, Kadosh Baruch Hu is accepting the tshuva on Shein Ninveh, Kadosh Baruch Hu is accepting the tshuva of the sailors. You see, tshuva is everywhere. Tshuva is always an option. Kadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't accept all sorts of tshuva. See, here you see, this teaches you that Kadosh Baruch Hu recognized something we haven't seen up until now. Up until now, Parshas Bereishis, we saw that people can do tshuva. Here we see that Kadosh Baruch Hu actually seeks to encourage tshuva. Not just he's willing to accept your tshuva, Kadosh Baruch Hu will actually come knocking. Kol dodi dofik. And this is actually, for Ramban's first try, this is a very special expression of Avos Hashem, which was unfortunately not responded to, right? Much as in that passage in Shir HaShirim, where the divine boyfriend comes knocking on the door, and Klal Yisrael, or was symbolized by the girl, she's already in bed, she's in her pajamas, doesn't want to get out. She's been looking for him for so long. And then he actually comes knocking on the door, and she just, in a moment of foolishness, is like too lazy to get out of bed. And as soon as the knocking stops, she realizes, like, about what I just do, and she runs to the door, and it's too late, and she runs madly throughout the town trying to find the dode, but he's already gone. That's one of the very famous passages one of the famous images in Shir HaShirim. Made even more famous by the Rav's drasha called Dod Dofik, but Shlomo Melech was around long before the Rav as well. But that image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming knocking, and that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is willing to accept us, but he's actually going to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will proactively go out and find the person who's steeped in chet. That's an incredible thing, right? A person is actively, what a chatzah. You're taking the gifts of life and talents HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me, and I'm using them against Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm using all the talents that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave me to do Averis. What a chatzim. So not only does the Kadosh Baruch Hu not destroy me on the spot, not only does the Kadosh Baruch Hu even open to my coming back tomorrow and saying, can I try again, Kadosh Baruch Hu will actually tap me on the shoulder. I'm the chatzim who's misusing the gifts he gave me to do the opposite of what I wanted to do. He'll come to me and show said, if you want to rethink it, I'm glad to talk. Let's sit down for coffee. And Kadosh Baruch Hu would reach out to us. That's such an incredible expression of Avos Hashem. Imagine, right, as imagine you were on the giving side of that. Let's just try to think about that for a moment. That will be an example. In 2 decades from now, let's say you love your adolescent child dearly, even though he or she is, of course, it wouldn't apply to anyone in this room. No one would ever have a havmina of being anything but incredibly respectful at all times to one's parents. But theoretically speaking, one could imagine there might be adolescents out there who once or twice over the course of teenage years were a little bit less than wholly respectful. Even though, right, and you feel like I have legitimate tinnitus, okay, maybe you do, maybe you don't. so much of who you are, and certainly so much of what you have materially, as a gift from parents. So hayitachen, and I'm just going to use it all against them, and for them to then calmly, you know, I'm in the middle of being obnoxious to my parents, and say, but Bubala, we love you, and that's why we want you to do X, Y, Z. Right? So if you're on the teenage end of that, it's like you're being annoying. But if you step out of it, so imagine this happened to someone else's parents, so you get a little more objective. It's really incredible. That's really incredible. Right? But that's Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That they're steeped in chet. The whole civilization that's steeped in abusing the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us to do the opposite of, live the opposite of the way he wants us to live. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, not only I'll let you do tshuva, not only am I going to wait, I'm not going to bring them out today. Let's wait. We'll give you 120 years slack. But I'm going to try to get you to rethink it. That's incredible. So, and that's the message. Exactly. I would say, hagufa. By trying to figure out what's pshat, now I see what the message is. Now I see, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Noach, knock yourself out and build an incredibly large table. Why? Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants ulayas tshuva. Ulayas tshuva. Now, one more question? Two more questions? Yeah, we'll come back after us. Yeah. What was the structure? Probably there were continents, yeah. That's a great question. That is a remarkable question. The answer to that may be the same as the answer to this. There was definitely an ace involved. There was definitely an ace involved. Which, as Rambam points out, Rambam, this is one of the many times Rambam makes great references elsewhere. And the Rambam writes this quite explicitly, both in the Moran and in Agadam HaTechelik, I think, and some of the letters. Not Agadam HaTechelik, but in the Moran and some of the famous letters. He says, if I believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if I believe that God created the universe, so once I accept the first of the Ani Mamans, logically, that's equivalent to saying that any nace is possible. Any miracle is possible, because God created the entire universe. He created all of physics and chemistry and biology, everything. So he could, logically, he could tinker with it however he pleases. He made the whole thing to begin with. Any nace is possible. But, as the Rambam says in several places, as Ramban is about to say right here, just because any nace is possible doesn't mean any nace is likely. Because Baruch Hu could do whatever he wants. But he even told us, this is something we touched on in Mishmar last week, because Baruch Hu chose to make a rhythmic universe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to make a non-random universe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have created a universe without any scientific laws at all. Stuff just happens. But he didn't. He wanted the universe to generally be predictable. The fact that there's something called physics was the decision that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made. So he's not interested in he could have made everything nisim gluyim, but he didn't want to. HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed the universe to generally work b'teva. And that's what he says here, and that is his second answer. You want to know why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Noah to make it so big? To reduce the nace. It's going to be miraculous any way you slice it. There's no way that Noah's going to build a table that could naturally encompass all the biodiversity Rosh Hashem's created. And as you pointed out, getting all the animals to the teva would be a nace anyways, and housing all the animals on the teva. What climate is the teva going to have that you can have, right? You can have polar bears and koala bears. That doesn't really seem like much of a shidduch. Elamai, obviously we're going to be nisim involvements. Lots of nisim. Okay. But still, an im calls there, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu sought to reduce the nace as much as possible. And he says, this is a general principle. You'll find a recurring pattern when HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't even hear about nisim in Tanakh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will want human beings to do as much as they can do, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu picks up the slack. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us a divine miraculous assist, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to take the shot. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do as much as we can, right? The famous Haftarah from Sefer Melachim, a Navi tells the woman, borrow, yeah, all she has left at home is one pach shemen. So he says, go to all the neighbors in town and borrow all the empty containers you can, right? And then shut the doors and start pouring. And she fills up all those containers with oil. Oil is very expensive. So you have, who knows how many, 50, 100 containers of oil, whatever it was. That was a lot of money. She sold it and she was able to pay off her debts and be financially whole again. What'd she get the containers for? Why did she have to get so many containers? She could have just kept, it could have just been all of a sudden, poof, oil. I could have come home and there are already containers full of oil. Why'd she have to go borrow the containers for? Anyways, it's going to be an ace. Only she has one little container of oil and she managed to fill up all those tens of containers. The answer is the same you sold. Yeah, it's going to be a miraculous component to it. The Kadosh Baruch Hu wants things to be, not only does the Kadosh Baruch Hu choose in general that things should be non-miraculous, even when it is miraculous, he wants to be as natural as possible. Hashayi b'dei shamayim. The peace needs to be b'dei shamayim. Rabban talks about elsewhere. We'll see later in the year. So it's like, well, what are the reasons? What are the causes for which a Kadosh Baruch Hu would bring an ace? A Kadosh Baruch Hu brings an ace as necessary, and even when he brings an ace, it'll be only as miraculous as necessary. And then the other layer of this teretz is also not only to fit things to be as non-miraculous as possible, Kadosh Baruch Hu wants things to be as tiv'i, as natural as possible, but also the notion that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants human involvement. That's the goal of Olam Hazeh, is for us to do, for us to accomplish, for us to seek to be more misdamel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the overarching design principle of Olam Hazeh, as we will see inside when we begin to learn Maseiach Sharm. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be involved. If it's not shaykh for us to do everything, okay. So then he may say, this is a sort of situation where I'm willing to step in and do an ace as well. But it doesn't take away from the value of our involvement, which is a big yisod, even in non-miraculous situations, as Ramchal talks about at the end of the second paragraph of Maseiach Sharim, that in our daily moral struggles with the Yetzirah, so we need Siyata D'Shemayim. Yetzirah is the cards are stacked against us. Yetzirah is very powerful. But the Navi says, the Gemara points out, if a Jew is ready to take the first step, then Kadosh Baruch Hu will be glad to give us an assist. We need the assist. But the assist will come once we start working. We do what we can. Even if we don't think we can do it all, but we have to seek to work as hard as we can, and then Kadosh Baruch Hu will assist us, whether it's in the Nisim Geluyim of the Teva and the Mabul, or the Nisim Nistarim of succeeding in Nisyonos, where we could not have predicted that we could actually pull it off.